The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Thank you very, very much indeed. Now, there's a small little match taking place somewhere in the world today, but there is a huge other event also taking place, which is that Bill O'Herlihy will be doing his last session, so to speak, on the same World Cup. Bill O'Herlihy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Marion.
Are you feeling very apprehensive?
No, but I tell you, for the first time, I think, it's dawning on me that this is my last day. That I'm facing the final curtain, as Frank Sinatra would have it.
Yeah.
And it's a strange feeling.
Tell me more.
Yeah, well, I mean, RTE has been so much part of my life for, believe it or not, for 49 years, both in terms of news features, current affairs and sport. So walking into RTE this afternoon at about 4:15, it'll be a bit special, won't it?
I'd say it will. But you're not having second thoughts, are you?
Oh, not at all, no. The reality is that I've been 49 years working with RTE, and I don't want to be going in a Zimmer frame, and I think the time has desperately come to leave. And I always said, go out at the top before you start making serious mistakes and people begin to say, my God, that guy has really gone off, you know.
Right.
So the World Cup final is the obvious time. And RTE agrees with that, be honest about it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. But anyway, tell me what stands out in your memories over the years. The Romania one, I presume.
Oh, obviously the 1990 World Cup was unbelievable, because that was the first time we ever qualified. It also was a very, very special time in Dublin, because I'm talking about Dublin specifically because that's where I live. And you know, I mean, poor old Gerry Ryan, God rest him, asked me after the World Cup, was I sorry I wasn't in Italy for it? I wouldn't have missed Dublin for anything. It was a very, very special time.
Mm.
And that was a very special World Cup from our point of view. And David O'Leary taking the penalty in the penalty shootout in Genoa was absolutely astounding, you know, from our point of view. And George Hamilton coming up with a wonderful line, the nation holds its breath.
He was right too.
The nation did hold its breath. And David O'Leary was fantastic, because he never took penalties, but he volunteered, which was a sign of great battle, which was something, by the way, that the Dutch players didn't do in their World Cup penalty shootout. You know, he showed more battle than a lot of them did, at their cost.
And you made the point that maybe the listeners or the viewers are not conscious of just how engaged you guys are in the studio. It's not just doing a job.
Oh, no. And in fact, interestingly enough, I was always very sorry When O'Leary scored that fantastic penalty in Genoa, I was very sorry that it didn't come back to the studio, because we were kind of jumping around, dancing around with delight that Ireland had got through to the next stage. And yet, I suppose if people were looking at us and judging us objectively on the basis of comment, they might have suggested we were kind of at times party poopers, but not really Irish supporters, where in fact you have a professional job to do at one hand, but you wear your heart on your sleeve at the other, you know. So it was highly emotional. But interestingly enough, when Katie Taylor won her gold medal in London at the most recent Olympics, they cut back to the studio, and there were tears and there were hugs and all kinds of things. Dara Maloney was anchoring that particular one, and I was delighted to see that, because it shows that those people who do their jobs professionally also, be deep down, are hugely emotionally tied to the Irish or the Irish person involved.
Right. Where'd you get the hat, by the way?
that hat was owned, believe it or not, by Tadhg de Brunn's son.
I see.
And it didn't work properly. I should have been able to flap the ears.
They did flap.
But I couldn't. So I gave it to me, and I said, I'm going to wear this, because it was a great celebratory occasion.
Do you remember?
But the ears did not work, so I was most disappointed.
you remember that?
Oh, I do. I'm old and busy, but I remember the hat.
As much as I remember the penalty.
and Ciao Roma, I think, was
Oh, yeah,
thing.
Yeah. So I didn't know what I was talking about at that stage. It was gobbledygook.
But would that be the standout moment throughout all?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Because it was historic.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some other wonderful times as well. When we saw Sanya twice competing against three Chinese runners who were clearly druggies who were never seen again after the Olympics, and she was robbed of an Olympic medal. And also against Jabot at another Olympics, when she was robbed of a medal by a druggie, she finished with a silver when it should have been a gold, you know. They were standout memories as well. But the drama, by the way, I wasn't on air for Katie Taylor, but I was doing the next programme. I was in the office. The drama when that final, when we were waiting for the result from the referees, you know, everybody thought she was beaten, except there was one guy there, and he was from Northern Ireland, and he was absolutely certain. He said, she will win by 2 points, which was precisely what happened, and the sense of relief in the Olympic office was unbelievable.
I can well imagine.
There was as much drama there, but my daughter Sally was actually at it, and she was at the fight, because she always goes to the Olympics, and she told me it was the best sports occasion she was ever at.
Yeah, there seems to have been a fantastic atmosphere.
I was actually there as well. I was covering it for the paper, and I have never ever experienced anything like the atmosphere. Everybody in the entire arena were just holding. I was holding hands with like one guy who was about 6'5", and the other guy was about 6'8", and the two of them were crying. Like they were literally with sheer tension waiting for the result. It was extraordinary. It was absolutely wonderful. And I think panels like Bill O'Hurley and the boys, I think they've brilliantly captured that over the years.
Barry, you want to come in?
Yeah, Bill Barry Devlin here. Hi.
Barry, how are you?
How are you? Great sense of loss that you're leaving. We genuinely miss you. But one thing I was going to ask was, Richard's version of you, did you give him lessons? Or because we think it's uncanny. What do you think?
Well, I actually initially thought, I mean, I didn't have any problems with it from the word go, but I didn't feel it was accurate in terms of capturing my gestures, my mannerisms and my accent. And I said to the lads rather peevishly, I said, listen, fellas, I don't talk like that, do I? And they said, you certainly do. And I said, do I make all these gestures? Oh, you certainly do. He has you down to a fine art, they said.
Well, and then you went home to your wife.
Sorry?
And then you went home to your wife.
Yes, and asked her, did I agree? Or did she agree? And did I talk like that? And she said yes. I have to conclusively prove or accept the fact. But I mean, he's brilliant. He's absolutely a genius. You know, like if you saw the one he did recently with when he was doing Gay Byrne, talking to both Dunphy and Giles in different ones. Absolute genius.
Yeah, amazing. His Gay Byrne is remarkable.
I've told this before, but poor old Colin Murray, you know, was very upset when he discovered that. That he was the victim of him out in doing a Leopardstown sketch on him, you know.
Yeah.
And he was very upset because he thought that this was very bad for him professionally. So he was actually thinking about making a formal complaint about it to stop it. And I said, Colm, you're mad. I said, he takes the mickey out of me all the time. But it elevates you. It actually gives you a certain cachet that you haven't before. So I said, don't do anything. Let it ride. And I said, you'll actually enjoy it immensely in due course, which, of course, he did. And he was delighted. He never did anything about it.
Bill, Lise Hand here. I'm just curious. I mean, it often used to get very tetchy in the studio between the various panellists because they're a lively bunch of lads. Did you ever feel that you actually might have had to intervene, literally, physically, any time, and if things were getting heated?
No. I mean, there's a certain level of showbiz involved, you know. And as Brady would say, I throw in the hand grenades, knowing full well what's going to happen. But no, I mean, I think one of the most important things is that We discovered very early on, because the survey was done, that only something like 32% of the people understood the game. That was done way back in about 1990, or very close to 1990. So we took a view then that the most important thing is bring the people with us. Not to be preachy or not to pretend you're a coach, but bring them in, give them a growing knowledge of the game. And I think that's one of the things that has been hugely important for us. And I can't ever really remember any serious rows we had. We had a couple of tetchy rows There was one recently with Liam Brady and myself about the quality of Trapattoni's football philosophy as against the recession in Ireland and the fact that very few people were going to matches in comparison to the old days.
Yeah.
And there were things like that. But once the programme is over, they're over. And in fact, I can tell you that we have a really happy programme. We have great fun in it, really good fun. We talk about all kinds of things, from politics to golf, to golf swings and various bits and bobs like that. So, yeah, and Giles was fascinating talking about how Mrs. Thatcher destroyed community life in England, and he was able to go through a chapter and verse. So we talk about all kinds of things. We're very friendly with each other, and we respect each other, our various skills and or lack of skills in some cases, like mine. But basically, we get on extremely well.
Fergus, you want to come in?
I just say, Bill, Fergus O'Dowd, congratulations.
Hi,
again
Fergus.
On your fantastic career. Just one little thing strikes me. I think it was you, many, many years ago, you were interviewing the Reverend Ian Paisley, and you asked him a very difficult question, and he turned to you and he says, excuse me, but have you been drinking?
He said, I'll tell you exactly what he said, Fergus.
Let me smell your breath.
He said, young man, he said, can I smell your breath?
And you
and
said,
I said to, I was a pioneer. And I said to myself, what in the name of God is he talking about?
Yeah.
But it transpired afterwards that we were doing it on the stage in the town hall in Ballymena. And there was a drunk on the stage. And what happened was he was at the back of the crowd, but he was pushing the crowd. So when I was doing the interview with Paisley, I was swaying backwards and forwards. And he got the smell of drink coming over my head.
That was a great event, anyway.
I said, Dr. Paisley, you've done a terrible thing. I said, I'm an orange man. And he looked at me in the eye and he said, no papist, he said, was ever an orange man. I said, I'm an orange man in the sense I do not drink.
And did he take your bump? Because that was very destructive for you.
Oh, it was.
Professionally, if anybody thought you were drunk on the job.
Oh, yeah. Plus the fact that it devalued me completely. I might as well have been mowing the lawn after that. I mean, he answered the questions, but everybody was breaking their backside laughing at me. Like, there was no question that they were taking my questions or his answer seriously any further, you know. But I found Paisley to be an extraordinary guy. He was... On that particular occasion, that was the first election in Banside for 21 years. And he lost the election, but it was clear. It was against O'Neill, if I remember correctly. And it was very clear that he was on the way up and O'Neill was on the way down.
Right.
And he transformed from a very smiley, good-humoured man to an absolute... What's the word for it?
Careful.
Yes,
we know what you mean.
To a person who was less pleasant, let me put it that way.
Right, yeah. Interesting. Actually, it was very interesting listening to talking about working with him in his latter days. And apparently he was a pleasure to work with. But anyway...
But he had a good sense of humour, you know. And he was a very friendly man when it suited him. And a very nice man when it suited him.
Well, I suppose that's what's puzzling about
it. You know?
I was in his house and you couldn't have met a more charming and
welcoming
man.
Yeah, I could believe that. And his son is a very nice fella as well.
Ian Jr. Mm. Bill, it's Mary Lou MacDonald here.
Oh, hi, Mary Lou. How are you?
Listen, just to congratulate you and to wish you well.
Thank you.
Certainly, I have to confess that I would be no soccer aficionado, but I live in
She'd
a household.
She'd be more Garth Brooks, really.
Well, you know, I've been out at the country and western wing of Sinn Féin in one human being. But just to wish you well, and certainly it's compulsive viewing in our house, and the chemistry that you create on the panel is just terrific and the hallmark of a real professional.
Oh, you're very
so
good.
Well
Thank
done,
you very
Bill.
Much indeed. Do you know one of the most extraordinary things, though, Marion,
yeah.
is the size of the audiences.
Mm.
We have audiences going up to 800,000 watching the programmes, and they're consistently like 40% and 50% of the... of the audience.
Yeah.
Like amazing, much, much bigger. But of course, it's the most exciting World Cup, better than South Africa by a long, long way last time.
Well, the Vuvuzelas kind of just...
Oh yeah, they've gotten everybody's nerves. But this afternoon or this evening would be very interesting because I'd say the romantics will all want Messi to get his World Cup medal.
Yeah.
But I would say the realists will say Germany.
Which are you, Fran Rooney?
Oh, well, I'm not. I have to be very careful because the lads make it very clear to me that I'm an anchor. I'm not an analyst, and I cannot stray into the analyst territory. They make that very clear to me.
Right.
But in fact, realistically, as a European, I want Germany to win, and I think they're by far the best team.
Bill, it's Fran Rooney here.
And the better team tonight.
So you can,
yeah, Fran Rooney, yeah.
Hi, Bill. It's Fran.
How are you, Fran?
Good. And yourself?
Very good, thank God.
Listen, the best of luck and congratulations. I had a question for you there. Just when John Giles and Dunphy fell out a number of years ago and they weren't talking, how did that affect the whole relationship on the panel?
Atmosphere in the studio,
The atmosphere in the studio.
That was over the Busby book that Eamon wrote. And John had to review it for the Herald, and Eamon didn't like the review, which John thought was very mild, but Eamon didn't like it because Eamon recognises that John is iconic, and if John doesn't like a book, it damages the book. Now, whether it did or not, I couldn't tell you, but that was his view. So they actually fell out, and John was to launch the book, but he was uninvited, let me put it that way. He didn't actually launch the book. And subsequently, they didn't talk I thought it was nearly a year, but they would tell you it was much shorter than that. But they was talk to me. But Tim O'Connor, God rest him, Tim was in charge of that, I presume it was the Champions League programmes at the time. And Tim made it very clear that he said, I don't care if you ever talk again, he said, but if you don't talk and behave yourselves on the panel like you should do, like you always do, he said, I will replace you. So there was never any difficulty. They were very good. They were very professional together, and they didn't speak to each other during commercial breaks or afterwards.
Was
or
that very tense in the studio?
There was no problem.
Is that like ask your father to pass the salt or something like that? You know,
I know they spoke to each other on air.
No, but during the commercial break.
Oh, they'd just say, "Well, Bill, this," or "Well, Bill, that," or "Billow, will you do this?" or "Billow," but they wouldn't speak to each other. They would say, "Kind of, yeah, Bill, would you ask John whatever?" You know. But that was rare. No, in fairness, that was rare. And they're great friends. They are genuinely great friends.
Right.
And so is Liam Brady, a great friend of theirs as well. And that's one of the great things. They're very strong in their views, but they're very strong in their friendship as well. And they work very well together. They are, I think, in my estimation, they're outstanding.
Yeah. I think that's kind of, we're all biased, of course, but I mean, I think it's universally agreed when you compare them with the commentators, which are kind of very anodyne of the other. Yes, Lise?
I'd just like to make the point, I think Brian Kerr has been, and I wonder what Bill thinks, Brian Kerr has been wonderful. His commentary really has, I think, really just brightened up a lot of the games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's
wonderful.
Very good. Brian is very knowledgeable as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's
so knowledgeable. And he's worked very hard. He told me that his whole life has passed him by in the last month, because he does, and you can see it on air or hear it on air, he does an enormous amount of research.
And he's the Leo Varadkar of commentators, I think. He tells it like it is, you know.
As long as you're not suggesting he has a poison chalice.
Or indeed a blues. Well, indeed. Funny enough, Bill, I was about to just revert into earlier stories. You know, if you wanted to make sure that nobody came after you as a pretender, give him health. But that would be a very mean-spirited view of this whole process, wouldn't it?
The pretender has been chosen. The pretender is Darren Maloney, and Darren Maloney, in many, many respects, is much better than me. He is very, very good. He's a very talented presenter. He's a very good interviewer, and once he gets used to the style of the three lads, he'll get better and better and better, and I will be forgotten, let me tell you, in about 6 months.
Well, and
maybe even shorter.
Well, we wish him very well, but I doubt if you will be forgotten. Will you hang on there for 2 seconds till I actually go to Rio? I understand there's a slight delay on the line, and I'm going to talk to Tom Hennigan there, just to set the scene for us for what's going to happen tonight.
Okay.
Hiya, Tom. Hello.
Hi, Marion. How are you?
I'm good. Can you give us a sense of the atmosphere there and the supporters and, I presume, a bias in favour of South America?
Well, Rio has been invaded by Argentines. I was getting the bus in from Sao Paulo yesterday and we got caught in a traffic jam of just a fleet of cars with fans hanging out the windows, swirling their tops around, singing, and all last night there were big crowds of them all over Copacabana where I'm staying, hanging around the bars watching the Brazil game. They celebrated Brazil's defeat, so it feels like it's Buenos Aires here rather than Rio de Janeiro at the moment.
And for German support?
There are Germans around, but they're in the minority by far. But, you know, it's a friendly atmosphere. Germans, far fewer of them, but they will be counting on the Brazilians. I think after what happened on Tuesday to Brazil and then Argentina getting to the final here, and the Argentine fans on Wednesday were taking the mickey out of the Brazilians at the stadium in Sao Paulo, I think that made up the mind for nearly all Brazilians that they want Germany to win to prevent Argentina winning the cup in their own house.
Yeah, it's funny. I heard a very, very funny story years ago about a German hitchhiker. I think I told it on the air before, but anyway, he went to a match somewhere and couldn't understand why there were so many German supporters in Ireland. They were playing England at the time, so they got near the ball. Anyway, never mind all of that. In terms of the expenditure, I'm sorry to bring in a serious note now, but the vast expenditure on this and the poverty and all of that in Brazil, are there still protests, or is there the general view that it was a good idea now?
I wouldn't say the general idea that is that it was a good thing to host and to spend all the money. I think many Brazilians will, once the tournament is over, go back and ask questions about some of these stadiums. Like the game that was played in yesterday, that stadium cost hundreds of millions of euro, a massive 70,000-seat stadium, and there's absolutely no use for it anymore. So yesterday was the sixth game of the World Cup, and now there's no use for it. There's no team to play there. It is in a city that doesn't have any team in the first two divisions in Brazil. The local support is a couple of hundred for most games. So I think those questions will come back in Brazil. In terms of protests, no, there won't be any protests. And there's two reasons, I think, for that. One, Brazilians have decided when the tournament is happening, we're going to enjoy the tournament and we'll, you know, get back to debating the issues around it later. And number two is because the protests have become so small and because people are so focused on the football, the authorities have felt able to crack down on the protesters. So yesterday in Rio, 19 people were called into police stations and told they were going to be arrested for 5 days. And basically they were identified as ringleaders of protests in previous weeks. And, you know, it's just arbitrary arrests, essentially. And so that's kind of, you know, the balance of why there's not going to be, I think, any major demonstrations against the final today.
Okay, who do you think is going to win?
Well, I saw Germany on Tuesday, and it's hard to look beyond them. They were just...
you don't think Messi can do it on his own?
I think...
Okay, listen, that delay on the line is...
Germany is... If Germany...
Sorry, yeah?
If Germany don't win today, that win against Brazil, which was historic in World Cup terms, it'll all be for nothing. And I think, you know, the players have to realise that. And I think that's why, you know, I would agree with what Bill was saying. I think they are the better team. Argentina have a good team. They have Messi. He could do something on the day. But Germany overall have been the better team. And I think the players will want to make a count today.
Okay, listen, thank you very, very much indeed. I'm sorry about that delay on the line. I just wonder also, by the way, what's going on in the Vatican. Two popes, one German, the other Argentinian. Will they hold hands and watch together? I don't know. Anyway, Bill, I wish you well. I hope the programme goes great tonight. Have you planned your exit?
In what sense? What I'm going to say is, mean, is it? I have, but I'm not going to make a song and dance. I'm not a song and dance type, you know. I leave that to the lads.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed for talking to us, and I wish you well in your retirement. Though I saw in the paper yesterday that you said you're open to offers from other stations.
Listen, that is a complete distortion. I was asked, would I be interested if somebody made an offer? And I said, well, I'd consider it. And that was the extent of what I said.
Right.
And that became the lead story of the Star. So the lead story is a distortion of what I said, to be honest.
Okay, we'll leave it there, Bill. And as I say, thanks for talking to us and I wish you well. And on that note, we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.